So we're going to how far we get with this tiny print here.
Right.
Well,
you
yeah.
You have to leave at half past?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so if George wants to stay, if Hesh, do you want to stay, we'll go a little bit longer than that. So the Mishnah says the following. This is on Daf Pe Gimel Amid Aleph. Misha Achzo Bulmus. Rashi identifies this disease, so to speak, it's a seizure of some sort, as Choli Ha'ochez Machmas Ravon. Ravon means hunger. Obviously, he's fasting, and Choli, all of a sudden, he gets this, you know, it's like an epileptic fit, almost. Ain of Chaos. You can identify it, says Rashi, by looking at his eyes. His eyes are very, very weak. Very, you know, he's almost blind. Okay? And Rashi adds, "Vahu misukan lamus." He's in a state of sakana, of danger of dying. Ukshemar iso choseres. It's only when his face, you know, regains its color, biyaduah and israpi, then we know that he's healthy. I think I mentioned to you once before. Do you remember what I told you that I heard a story about the Belzer Rebbe? Not this one, the Friedrich, that he used to go around on Yom Kippur and look at people's faces. And sometimes he would say to a person, to a chassid, "You have to eat on Yom Kippur," because he felt he was just white or whatever it was. His eyes were closing, were dimming. Now, what should we do here? What kind of stuff should we feed him? It's Yom Kippur. The Isur Achil on Yom Kippur is an Isur Kares. We're talking about a very severe Isur. And yet, look what the Mishnah says. Not only are we going to feed him Dvarim HaMutarim, you know, something that you're allowed to eat, is Machilin also, if we have to, Afilu Dvarim Tmeim. Even something which you're not allowed to eat the whole year round. So now it's a double whammy, if you will. He's eating Dvarim Tmeim, meaning things that are not in kosher, and he's violating Yom Kippur. And the question here that I want to raise on the Mishnah is an obvious one. Why did the Mishnah have to tell me that we're allowed to feed him non-kosher food? If he's violating Yom Kippur for the sake, and all this is for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, the Gemara is going to derive it from the Pasuk V'chai Bo'em V'lo Shiyomis Bo'em. So then certainly you could feed him Dvarim Tmeim. I mean, Dvarim Tmeim on a lower level than violating Yom Kippur. So I wanted to show you... Yeah, what does Rashi say? I didn't see an answer. No, so I'm saying, here's my question. If he's Mesukan Lamut, why did the Mishnah feel that, you know, I got to tell you a Chiddush, that not only can he eat, but feed him Dvarim Tmeim if need be? So I looked in the Mefarshim here, and he says in the name of the Siach Yitzchak, one of the great Mefarshim, and in the name of the Tosefos Yom HaKippurim, another one of the great Mefarshim, one's an Ashkenazi, one's a Sfaradi, that the Mishnah wants to tell you, Ein Tzarech Lachzar Achad Dvar Mamutar. Give him whatever is on the table. If it happens to be non-kosher food on the table, that's what's accessible and readily accessible, that's what you should feed him. That's the Chiddush in the Mishnah. Meaning, if you're going to take that delay of a few minutes, you know, try to get him kosher food, it's a sakana, it's a danger. We can't play around. Ad, and at what point do we say, alright, he ate enough? Ye'oru enough. His eyes, the light goes back to his eyes. Then we know, it's all in the eyes, that he's healthy again, he's regained his health. Mishan eshachol kelev shotev, a person was bitten by a rabid dog. Ein machilin oso. Mechatzar kaved shalo. Okay, this is complicated. We'll come back to this later if we have a time, but your time is limited and I wouldn't want to get into this. The question is, what kind of food do we give him on Yom Kippur if he was bitten by a rabid dog? And there's some complications here which I don't want to cover now. And then we get to the case of Hachoshesh Begrono. V'odoy Rav Menasya ben Charash Omer, he used to say the following, Hachoshesh Begrono. Okay, he has, there's something really painful about his throat. And again, we're going to talk about a situation where there are obvious signs that he's in danger. Is Matilo Sam Betok Piv B'Shabbos, will put a certain drug in his mouth on Shabbos. Mipnei Shehu Sofek Nefashos, because we have a doubt, a possibility that maybe he is in a situation of sakhan. So the Marsha asks the obvious question, what's this sam? You're giving him a drug. So why can't you give him a drug on Shabbos? You know, what you have to tell me, because he's about to die, we give him a shalom? So why did you have to invoke the reason of Sofik Nefashos to justify giving him this drug on Shabbos? So the Teferis Yisro, which is one of the super commentaries on the Mishnah, it's called Yochanan Boaz, if you've ever seen it, below Yochanan Boaz. He says the following, Lashma Inon, the chiddush here is, the af im acherim tzrichim l'chal Shabbos avuro, kegon litlosh asovim imechubar, o levashlam afiloch imutel hatil osov goz. In other words, if this medical, this medicinal trufa, how do you say in English, treatment requires that we cook something on Shabbos. You know, we have these herbs, we have to cook them, or we have to pluck them out of the ground, which is another category of malacha called tlisha. Even that's okay. So it's not the Mishnah is not coming to teach me, Rav Masi is not coming to teach me that we're allowed to feed him this drug, but rather we're allowed to prepare the drug, even though it entails violating the Shabbos. The neshu sufik nefashos, because this is a case where he might die. The chol sufik nefashos doche es haShabbos. Even a sufik, even a doubt, overrides the Shabbos. Okay. What I really want to call your attention to is the seifa of the Mishnah, the second part of the Mishnah. Misha nafla olav mapoles, a person is underneath debris, a structure collapsed, and the sufik who shom, we don't know if he's trapped there, sufik enosham, maybe he's not there, sufik chai, we don't, and even if he is there, maybe he's already dead, sufik nes, sufik kusi, we don't know if he's a Jew, sufik Yisrael, we don't know if, I'm sorry, we don't know if he's a non-Jew, maybe he is a Jew, is mefakhin olav esagal. We're going to clear out the debris until we can expose the body and see perhaps it's a Jew, perhaps he's still alive. Matza'u chai, if we find that he's still alive, is mefakhin, we continue in this process of unearthing his body and freeing it from all the debris that fell, all the stones and whatever. The mess, but if we find that he already expired, yanichu, there's no need to continue violating the Shabbos. It's too late. We'll wait till after Shabbos, and then we'll bury the dead. Okay. What I'd like to do now is study this principle of sofek nefashos lahakel. Okay, then. So I want you to look now. If you could fast forward to Pei Dalid Amud Beis. And we're counting down from the top of the page, 12 lines down. The Gemara says, first quoting the Mishnah, do you have it? If before the wide lines, you can count up three lines. Mipnesha Sofik Nefashasu. And then it says Sofik Nefash Lahakil. So the Gemara is bothered by this. Lama Li, why do I need Sula Meimar? Why do you have to add Vechol Sofik Nefashas Doches HaShabbos? I mean, you've already told me that it's a case of Sofik Nefashas. There are words here in this Mishnah that are superfluous. Om Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav. Lo Sofik Shabbos Zu Bilvad Amru. Not only if we have a doubt that maybe he'll die if we don't violate the Shabbos on this Shabbos. Ela afilu sofek Shabbos acheres. Even if we know that he could survive this Shabbos, but we think he might not survive next Shabbos, we can violate this Shabbos. Hey chidomi, what's the case? Kigon diomduha lismani yome. The Rofim evaluated that he would survive if he gets medical treatment for 8 consecutive days. The Yom HaKam, the first of the 8 days, is Shabsa, is on Shabbos. Is Mao Detemar might think Li Akev Adli Urto? Why don't we delay this until nightfall, till Motzei Shabbos? Why should we violate the Shabbos? Ki hechi dulo nechel alei trei shabsa, so that we don't have to desecrate 2 shabbosos. Meaning, if we start motzi shabbos and then count 8 days, we'll only violate 1 shabbos. Kamash malon, the chiddush is no. We have a principle of sofek nefashos doches haShabbos, and this teaches me that we're going to violate the Shabbos for the sake of his refuah on this Shabbos, and then if we do it on this Shabbos, how many shabbosos are we going to violate? 2.
Yeah, but it's a sofek on the second one.
Correct. It's Tanya Namiyachi, we learned this in a Braisa. Mechamim in chamim l'chola b'Shabbos. We'll heat up water for the sake of a chola on Shabbos. Again, there's a chola sheish po sakana. And even if he doesn't drink the water, it might even be that if you take a look at the price, it says bein lash kosa, whether it's to give him water to drink, bein lavroso, or even to wash his body, and that'll bring him back to health. V'lo Shabbos zu bilvad omru, not only will we violate this Shabbos, ela l'Shabbos acheres, even if he's not in absolute need immediately, urgently of violating the first Shabbos, but there's a suffix, maybe he'll die for the next Shabbos, so we'll violate the first Shabbos. V'ein omrim nantidlo, we do not delay violating the Shabbos until after Shabbos, and say Shema Yavri, maybe he'll get healthy on his own. That we're not going to do. Elo mechamim lo miyat. With urgency, we're going to violate this Shabbos, the first Shabbos, today, the first of the eighth day, and we're going to heat up the water. Because of this principle of suffik nefashos. V'lo suffik. Not only suffik Shabbos zu will we violate the Shabbos alafilu suffik l'Shabbos acheres. And not only that, ain osin dvarim alolu. We don't do this lo yedei nachri. Even if there's a non-Jewish physician, we're not going to ask him to do it. V'lo al yedei. Now here, there's a girsa problem, but our girsa should say ketanim. Do you have the word ketanim there?
Kutim.
You have kutim. It should say ketanim. Ketanim is the girsa of the Tosefta, the Tzarif's girsa, the Rosh's girsa, the Gra's girsa, the Rashas, whole line ketanim. Ella al yedei gedola Yisrael. We only do it with Yisrael, meaning Jews, and gedolim and then mature. So don't start running around looking for a child. You know, sometimes when we need to violate the Shabbos, we look for a child, or we look for a guy to do it. No, in this case, even a gadol and Yisrael should actually implement the violent Shabbos.
He was in yeshiva and they were learning on Shabbos.
Speak a drop loud about it.
My brother was in yeshiva and they were learning on Shabbos morning and the telephone rang. Then he rang again. They left it. He rang the third time and left it. Rosh Hashiva says, if somebody's phoning in yeshiva four times on the Shabbos morning, it's got to be important.
No.
I'll pick it up. So he answered, who was it? Wrong number. But you don't know.
Wow. The Ein Omrim, and we shouldn't say, let's find a woman to violate the Shabbos. Again, that makes no sense, but anyway. And Lo Al Yedei Kusiyim, and we're going to look for non-Jews. Avol mitzarfin l'das acheres. Okay, what's this language? First, we'll translate it literally, and then we'll explain it. Avol mitzarfin, we can add their opinion l'das acheres to support another that same opinion that's been expressed by someone else. So, what does this mean? Rashi explains, and all the Rishonim explain that if there are two people that say that this chola has to violate the Shabbos, his life is in danger if we don't violate the Shabbos. But they're outnumbered by three.
It's suffix, no.
Wait, well, so let's get the numbers, the facts on the ground. So again, there are two people who say that the chola has to eat. And in order to eat, we have to violate the Shabbos. We have to shecht an animal or cook some food, right? But they're contradicted by three experts who say that he's okay, he'll survive Shabbos, his life is not in danger. So we would outnumber and outvote the two who say that we want to violate the Shabbos in favor of the three who say we don't need to violate the Shabbos. But now a woman comes along, or a Kusi, or a non-Jew, and says that this chola, if he doesn't eat, will die. And therefore, that creates what's called a suffik ashakal. It was three who said no, it was two who said yes. Now we add either a woman or a kusi, and it becomes three against three. What principle do we apply now, George? It's three against three? Suffik nefashos lahakel. Right, Jeremy?
Yes.
Suffik nefashos lahakel. Tana Rabbanan, mefakhin, we learned in the Braisa, pikuach nefesh b'shabbos. We should supervise and make sure that all the needs of a chola who is in a state of danger are taken care of over Shabbos, vazoriz, and he who jumps up to do it first, he's really energetic about it. Hareze mishubach, he is praiseworthy. It's not that he's violating the Shabbos, he's fulfilling the Shabbos. V'ein tzarech lito rishus mi bezdin, and he doesn't have to ask for permission from the Beis Din. Ha-Ketzad, what's this case? Well, why would you even think, you know, maybe I should ask Beis Din, ask the court, whether I have permission, I have the green light to violate the Shabbos. So the case that the Braisa gives is Ra'at Tinok Shenafalia. He witnesses a child who fell into the ocean. Is Poresh Mitsuda Umalehu. He will set up a net that'll throw into the ground, into the water, and he'll raise the child from the water. Vazariz Arazim Ishubach. And he who's first to do this and takes the lead is praiseworthy. The Ein Tzarich Litol Rishusmi Bezdin, he doesn't have to take a permission and license from the Bezdin. Now, if you look at the next five words, the Gemara is going to explain, why would I have a Havamina that I might need the license, the okay, the bracha from Beis Din? The Afal Gavdikot Saidei Kavrei. Even though he's interested not only in bringing the child up, he's also fishing for fish. This guy's a professional fisherman. And he fishes 6 days out of the week, but not on Shabbos. Now he has the opportunity to fish on Shabbos. Again, it's very hard for us to understand this reality, but the reality the Gemara is addressing is where a man has a double intention. Yeah. You know, once I'm already violating the Shabbos, why not bring up some fish? No, Jeremy, what did you want to say?
Once I'm throwing in the net, might as well.
Yeah, Jeremy, you want to say something?
Yeah, okay.
You know, like the famous story of the Jew that gets called in by the pirates. You know, the Paritz was the non-Jewish general mayor, you know, the nobleman. So the Paritz is sitting there with the Jew, and he has a gun, a revolver on the table. And as the conversation goes on, the nobleman calls one of his people. He says, "Bring me a bottle of wine." Now, this is non-Jewish wine, and this is a frumah. He's not allowed to drink the wine. So the Paritz pours himself wine, and then he has another glass, and he pours wine for the Jew. And the Jew, he's scared. What do I do? So at that moment, when the nobleman sees the Jew hesitating to drink the wine, he points to his revolver. So the Jew says to the nobleman, "Can you fill up the cup?" In other words, once I have to drink the wine, fill it up to the top. You know. So this guy figures, if I'm already going fishing for the baby, let me raise the fish as well. So in such a case, even though he's doing this, it's absolutely allowed. There's no violation here because it's one act of tzeda, of capturing, and adarabba, he's going to get credit. And praise because he's saving the baby. And then another case. Ra'atinok shenafal abar. He sees that the baby fell into a deep pit. Oker chulya. He's allowed to take one of the stones from the outer rim of this ditch, because that'll make it easier for him to go down to the ditch. Umaleu, and he brings the tinok up. Vazaris, and if he does this without thinking, you know, with an alacrity, is harezem eshubach. He's praiseworthy. V'ein tzarich litol rishus mi Beis Din. Again, what's the chiddush? Why would I think he'd have to ask rishus from Beis Din? Afal gav de misakein darga. Even though apparently this bar has some use to it. Maybe there's some minimum amount of water on the bottom of the bar or whatever it is. And now he's making it easier for himself that during the week he's going to be able to go down into the bar. That's called Misakin Darga. He sets up a Darga, means like a step, that he'll be able to go into it. So he has vested interest here. He gains benefits. But nevertheless, he's allowed to do it. And then there's a third case. Right, Melech is Bona. Is Rosh and Ninala Delos Bifnei Tinok. The child is inside a room that's locked. And even though it's not like there's no air inside that room, but the child is locked in the room. And again, in this case, there's no way of opening the room unless we break it down, as we'll soon see. But what's the situation here? Why would this warrant violating the Shabbos? So the Mefarshim explained, because the Tinok might be overwhelmed by fear. A child who's locked into something could go into a panic situation. And that panic for a young child who's weak in constitution might even bring about his death. Is Shovro, we're allowed to break down the door. Umotzio, and he brings out, he frees the child. Well, so what again? What benefits does he have over here? Even though he breaks down the door, and when he does so, he has in mind that he wants the wood of the door of this delos. What's he going to do with the wood of the door? Maybe he's going to use it as firewood. You know, so he's breaking down this door, and nevertheless, he's gaining something from it. He has financial benefit, and that also is part of his motivation. And nevertheless, it's not only mutter, but we're happy, we're more than happy to that he's doing this. So we don't have to go to a bezdin. You know, now's not the time to go to a bezdin. This is urgent, and we have to take the law. And the last case is mechabin. Let's say there's a fire. Something caught on fire. And kibui, putting out the fire, extinguishing a fire in Shabbos, is one of the 39 malachas. But what's going to happen if he doesn't put out the fire? It may spread and people will die, chas v'shalom. So therefore you're allowed to put out the fire. And not only that, umafsikin, you're allowed to be mafsik, means, let's say there's a fire. And you could contain the fire, but in order to contain the fire, you have to set up barriers. You have to bring metals, you know, that are sturdy enough to withstand the heat of the fires, or other different utensils, or maybe you'll bring earthenware, and perhaps these kalim are full of water. You have to do whatever you have to do in order to guarantee that the fire won't spread b'Shabbos. So what was my hav meaning that I need reshus from Bezdin? Even though to come in machech makuche, even though he's mashkil gecholim umashvosam k'deish yuchal litzlos b'motzai Shabbos. When he puts out the fire, you know what he decides to do? He's going to flatten all the pieces of wood that became charcoal, so that after Shabbos he can do a naf-naf, what they call here. You know, he can do a barbecue. You know, people have all sorts of thoughts that go through their mind. You know, and once they're violating the Shabbos, they figure, why not gain some benefit from it? Like, fill up the cup with the wine, right? So even so, in all these cases, We need to encourage him to do so. Okay, Jeremy, you gotta go, but what if we could stay another few minutes, depending on what you have, I'd like to fast forward now to Omer Rav Yosef, because this is the sugya that I really wanted to get to. If you count up from the bottom of the page, we're on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. Pei Dalet Amud Beis.
Two dots.
Yeah, it should be the two dots. Can you find it, George?
No, I was missing. Sorry. What's the heading?
It should say Omer Rav Yosef Omer Rav Yehuda Meshmul Lo Holchu B'Pikuach Nefesh Achar Arov. Did you find it?
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. Now, normally the halacha says that if we have a suffix, we have a doubt, then majority rules. You don't know if this woman gave birth after 7 months or after 9 months, right? So we say the majority. Let's say you have meat, you know, two pieces of kosher meat and one piece of non-kosher meat, is you go after the majority. But here says Rabbi Yehuda Meshmul, with regard to pikuach nefesh, if someone's life is in danger and there's some doubt. For example, you remember the case where somebody was under a collapsed building and we didn't know if he was Jewish, if he was not Jewish. So let's say most of the members of the city are not Jewish. It's not a particularly Jewish population. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Shmuel, Lo holchu b'pikuach nefesh achar rov. In this case, the law of rov is suspended. And suffik nefesh lahakil means not only a suffik, but even a suffik that has a rov against it. And the rov, the majority, tells you that there's no need to violate the Shabbos. Nevertheless, we'll violate the Shabbos for the miut, for that outside chance, you know, statistically, that's very slim. But nevertheless, it might be a Jew. Hechi domi, what's the case? If it's a case we have nine Jews and one non-Jew mixed in, and the, you know, the building collapsed, and we don't know if he belongs to the Rov or to the Miut. Is Ruvi Yisrael Minu? You've got now Rov Yisrael. So I don't need Rabbi Yehuda or Shmuel to tell me Lo Holchu B'Pikuach Nefesh Achar Rov, because here the Rov would tell me that we have to violate the Shabbos. He wants to tell me the case where the Rov would indicate that we should not violate the Shabbos. Inami, the Gemara says, even if it's a case of palgu palgu, half of the members of the community are Jewish and half are non-Jewish, safek nefashas lahakel. So then once again, I don't need Shmuel to tell me any chidushim. We have a principle of safek nefashas lahakel. We have to, in a case of doubt, we have to do whatever we have to do and violate the Shabbos. Ella, but rather, what's the case? The ikar tisha kusim v'Yisrael echad. The building fell on one individual, and that individual came from a group. That group is made up of 9 non-Jews and 1 Jew. So the Rov would tell me that what? Who got caught under this the debris?
The Kuti,
the non-Jew. Nevertheless, there's a possibility, 1 out of 10, let's say, that it's a Jew, and therefore will violate the Shabbos, will be mfakeach as a gal, in the hope that we can save a Jewish life. So Gemara says, Hanami Pshita. He says, wait a minute, you're telling me that in this case, if it wasn't Pikuach Nefesh, if not for the special din of Pikuach Nefesh, Vein Holchu Pikuach Nefesh Ach Rov, we would rely on Rov? He says, absolutely not. He says, Hanami Pshita, even without the din of Pikuach Nefesh, we would not apply the principle of Rov. Tahavi Le Kavua, Vechol Kavua Ke Mechtzal Mechtzedomi. Rabbi Osei, have you ever heard of this? Kavua. What's kavua? Kavua means that the suffix that we have is b'makom kvius. It's at a place where everything is stationary. Now, it's not like you find a piece of meat in the street and you don't know where it came from. That's called kol d'parish, miruba parish. If you have 9 kosher butcher shops, we assume that this meat that you found must have come out of one of the 9 kosher butcher shops. What's kavua? Kavua is the chanus itself, the store itself. Let's say I go into a store and I don't remember that I buy meat for my dog, you know, gains, whatever they call it, the different companies. Or did I buy meat for my family? If I bought meat for my family, I went into which kind of butcher shop? A kosher butcher. If I bought meat for my dog, so why spend the extra money on kosher meat? Right? I mean, I don't need Lapid to tell me that non-kosher meat is cheaper than kosher meat. That's true all over the world. I might as well buy non-kosher meat. But I don't remember what I was doing on that day. And I have a piece of meat and it's indistinguishable. So what do I do in that case? So there, it doesn't matter how many stores out of the 10 stores were kosher. Even if 9 out of 10 were kosher, I can't eat this meat. Why? Because that's called kol kavua kimechtzal mechtzadami. Whenever the suffix is nolad bekvius, now the suffix is not on a piece of meat that I find in the street that was already poresh from the chanuyas, but it's on the chanus itself. What chanus did I go into? So I'm asking about my entry into a chanus. Which chanus did I see in front of me and enter into to buy this meat? That's called kavua. The suffix is in kvius, it's in the stores themselves. Therefore, if let's say you have 10 people that are together in one group, and they are each kavua bimkomo, they're each set in where they are, if you have a suffix about one individual, one body in this case, then you cannot apply the principle of Rov. The din of Rov is suspended in favor of the din of Kol Kavua, Kimechta, Al Mechta Dami. The suffix is Noah Bikfius. Lo Tzricha, the Gemara says, the parish lechatzra cheres, that they got up and they went from one stationary courtyard into another stationary courtyard. But once they left, and now we find a certain body, and it's underneath the debris, and we don't know whether to be Mechal Shabbos to save it, is it Jewish or it's not, I can now apply the principle of Rov, which goes in both directions, L'kula and L'chumra. If I apply the principle of Rov, because it's a case of Parish L'chotzer HaKeretz, and it's not Kavua, so if 9 out of 10 people are Jewish, then I assume the one I found is from the 9 that's Jewish. If on the other hand, 9 out of 10 are non-Jews, then I have to apply the principle of Rov and assume that the body that I'm looking for underneath this debris is a non-Jewish body. I can't violate the Shabbos for a non-Jew. But the answer is, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel, Ein holchin b'pikuach nefesh achar rov. Despite the halach of rov. Rov is a universal halach, but it has one situation where it's blocked and it doesn't apply. And that's pikuach nefesh. So even though 9 out of 10 are what? Are goyim, nevertheless, I violate the Shabbos on the tzad that maybe I'll save a Jew. Mal detem, I would have thought, if not for the statement of Rav Yehuda Shmuel, called the parish meruba parish, which means that when something is parish, it's parish from the rov. So therefore, here there are 9 out of 10 bodies that are non-Jewish. So I assume the body that was parish came from the 9 that are non-Jewish, because there's only one Jewish body. He's kamash molan, Shmuel tells me, because nefesh acharov, despite the universal principle of kol de parish meruba parish, that principle is suspended in favor of a chai bohem of pikuach nefesh. So even though the chances of my finding a Jew are so slim, because the numbers here are clearly 90%, you know, in favor that it's a non-Jew, nevertheless, for that 10% possibility, I violate the Shabbos. That's called, in the language of Shmuel, lo holchu b'pikuach nefesh, achar harov.
So, tough is that if a building falls down in Holland, do you make pikuach nefesh or not?
Where in Holland, you said?
In Harlem, in New York.
In Harlem. Oh, I think you said Holland. So again, you know, Harlem has undergone what's called the gentrification. So this is all because of Jimmy Carter. Now Harlem is changing. It's unbelievable. But no, I would even assume it classically, if there are Jews that go into that neighborhood, and if there's some percentage point of a possibility that this building fell on a Jew and we can dig up the bottom and find the Jew, then that's what we have to do. Because ein holchem b'pikuach nefesh acharo.
But also, maybe not for Dr. Sholem?
Oh, that's something else. Yeah, no, that's Eva, what we call it. We didn't get to the sugya of Eva, you know, under what circumstance do we violate the Shabbos even for the sake of a God? We're assuming now the pristine, you know, pure, abstract halacha that we will not violate Shabbos for a God. Not because we have anything against Goyim, but simply because the Gemara says on Daf Pei Hayamid Beis, which I don't know if we'll get to, that chal all of Shabbos achas, kadei shishmo Shabbos is harbit. You know, so that doesn't apply in the case of a non-Jew. Any effect the Gemara, is this really so that we don't go basa rov? V'ha Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav Yochanan. We have a statement that traces back to Rav Yochanan. Tisha kusi in Yisrael echad. If a mapoles falls in a situation where we had a group of 9 non-Jews and only one Jew basa chatzer, if it's in the same chatzer, is mefakhin, but if it's chotzer acheres, if they packed out, is ein mefakhin. So let's understand, what's the difference between the reisha and the seifa? The reisha is the case of osa chotzer. It means that they are in a chotzer. And one person now is, because of the angle in which the, you know, something fell from the top, he is now buried underneath a gal. So that's called kol kavua, and then we activate the principle of Safek Nefashos Lahakel. But let's say they were parish into a Chatzer Acheres, and now there's no longer a din of Kavua, is Ein Mefakhin. Why? Because the Rov are Kusiyim. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yochanan rejects this principle of Ein Holchim B'Nefashos B'Pikot Nefesh Acharov, but on the contrary, he says that even in the case of Pikot Nefesh, you want to know the B'Mfakech all of a Sagal, if there's a majority that tells you he's not Jewish, is Ein Mefakhin. It means we go Basarov. So it means, according to Rabbi Yochanan, just the opposite of what we saw according to Shmuel. According to Shmuel, we said Ein Holchim B'Pikot Nefesh Acharov. Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha of rov applies even in a case of pikuach nefesh, even if it means that we're going to assume that the body that's underneath the gal is a non-Jewish body. That's because of the halacha of kol deparish meruba parish of rov. We will not violate the Shabbos. It's the exact opposite of what we saw in Shmuel. I'm not sure why the Gemara sees a problem here. After all, Rabbi Yochanan is an Amora, and Shmuel is also an Amora. So, okay, maybe Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. But the Gemara thinks that there's got to be a way of reconciling Shmuel with Rabbi Yochanan. Because the way that Rabbi Yehuda recorded and transmitted the statement of Shmuel, lo holchu b'pikuach nefesh acharov, you get the impression that Shmuel was absolutely certain about it. He formulated this new principle, which has to be the rule of thumb with regard to pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. But yet, we seem to see that it's not so, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So Gemara says, lo kasha, Shmuel could say that the Parish Kulu, that when the Shmuel hold the Holchu b'Pikuach Nefesh Achar Harov, that's when they all were Parish from Makom Kavua, they went into a different Chatzer. And therefore Mefakhin, because we're not going to rely on the Rov. Why? Because since we knew that there was one Jew in the original Chatzer, it's very possible that this is what the Gemara's language is, Huchzak Lehem Yisrael. We know that there was a Jew. But ha, what's the case of Rabbi Yochanan? De Parush Miktasayhu. That only some of this original group of 10 individuals left into the other Chatzer. So what's going on over here? Are we relying on Rov or are we not relying on Rov? The answer is, if Parish Miktasayhu, and we don't know that in the second Chatzer, where the building collapsed, there was a Jew, we don't know B'chlal that there was a Jew in that area, is then we apply the principle of Holchim Achar HaRov. And even Rabbi Yochanan, who says that we rely on Rov, and therefore, since 9 out of the 10 are non-Jews, we cannot violate the Shabbos. That's because lo huchzak lan liYisrael. In the first case, and that's what Shmuel was addressing when he completely suspended the operation of Rov, that was a case of Parish Kulhu. And since it was Parish Kulhu, there's no kavua kemechtzal mechtzadom. And therefore, we will apply the principle of kol de Parish, miruba Parish. But that's only because Parish Kulu. Parish Kulu means that the entire group of 10 left into the second Chatzar. Who's now in the second Chatzar at that moment? No. What I'm saying is, if Parish Kulu means all 10 went from Chatzar A into Chatzar B. So who, which?
Kutim are
there. There are 9 Kutim and 1 Yisrael. So Shmuel is saying Ein Holchin Achar Rov because what? Single out one of the 10. Who's the most important one as far as our discussion is concerned? The Jew, correct? So since there's one Jew in this new Chatzer, that's called Huchzak Yisrael Bosa Chatzer. We have a Chazaka that there's one Jew there. We don't know which body is buried underneath the debris in the second Chatzer, but we do know that before the building collapsed, there was at least one Jew in that Chatzer. That's called Huchzak Yisrael. When does Rabbi Yochanan say, no, we're going to rely on Rov and we're not going to be in Fakech Hasagal? That's a case of Osa Chatzer. Parish Miktasayim. Parish Miktasayim means a certain part of the group of this 10 went into the second Chatzah and then the building fell out. Now let's say 3 people came out of this group. I'm just throwing out a number. 3 out of the 10 went out. What can you not say, which we said in the ratio, when all 10 went? That there's definitely what? A Jew. Here, 3 people left. Maybe those are 3 out of the 9 goyim that were there, the kusim, and therefore there's no huchzak Yisrael in the second chatzah. If there's no huchzak Yisrael, then we're gonna say that probably the one who's underneath the debris is a goyim. We're not gonna violate the Shabbos. And the Gemara claims that even Shmuel would accept that. So there's no contradiction here between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. So we'll just learn a few more lines, and then we'll be able to turn the page. So the Gemara says, "Umi Amar Shmuel, how are you telling me that Shmuel agrees to Rabbi Yochanan that Ein Holchim B'Pikuach Nefesh?" I'm sorry. Are you going to tell me that Shmuel holds that Ein Holchim B'Pikuach Nefesh Achar Rov? Right, that was the original quote that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. O Holchim B'Pikuach Nefesh Achar Rov. But Tanan, we learned in a Mishnah, it's quoted at the end of the first paragraph of Ksubis. Matzah, but there's a city that's made up of Jews and non-Jews, and in that but, in that city, because the word ear is Lashon Nekeva, they found a baby, Tinok Mushlach. A child was left for itself, abandoned. Yeah, it's like a bamboo cradle, you remember? And he doesn't know if this child is a Jew or a non-Jew. So the logical way of doing this would be to see what kind of population do we have in this city? Is it a Jewish population or is it a non-Jewish population? So Imrov Kusim, that's exactly what the Mishnah says. If the majority of the population of this city is non-Jewish, is then Yisrael. I'm sorry, then Kusa. We assume that this baby is not a Jewish baby. Again, I don't know why they can't tell. All right, they didn't have DNA testing, but, you know, did it have blue eyes and blonde hair? I don't know. So in any event, Im Rov Yisrael, if the city is a Jewish city, right? Now, I don't know exactly what the parameters of a city are. Let's say, for example, you could have different neighborhoods within a city. I don't know. It could be that it's enough if you found it in a Jewish neighborhood. I don't know.
The city was in Jerusalem. The city was Slobodka with a few people.
So, but he's saying Rov Yisrael, that most of the people in the city are Jewish. So I don't know what you mean by a few people. A few Goyim, maybe. That's what you mean.
Yeah.
Is then Yisrael, then we treat this baby and assume that it's a Jew. Mechza al mechza. What if it's 50-50? Again, only in small towns can you come up with a 50-50 situation. So 50% of the town is Jewish, 50% is non-Jewish. Is then Yisrael. We're going to assume that the baby is a Jewish baby. Amar Rav, Rav says, Lo Shadu, when did this Mishnah, in what scenario was this Mishnah formulated, that if there are most members of the city are Jewish, then the Tinok that you find is assumed to be Jewish, El Alach Yosef. That's only to feed him. Correct, there's a din of feeding Aniye Ircha. So we assume that this baby is Jewish because most of the city population is Jewish. That's as far as giving the baby sustenance. Avoli Yachso. But we don't know what his yuchsin are. For example, if this baby grows up and has a daughter, and the question is whether that daughter can be married off to a Kohen, if we assume the baby is Jewish. Lo. He says, we're not going to give her, if let's say it's a girl, you know, we're not going to give her the status of a Jewess, but she would be prohibited to kahuna, because maybe she's not Jewish. Even though we could be Megayer, she could convert, but a Kohen's not allowed to marry a Gioris as well. And now just to say that we turned the daf, so we'll read a little bit longer, and it says, Ushmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, L'fakeach Olav Es Hagal, that this halach of Rov, what's the majority of the population of the city, is relevant to violating the Shabbos. If most of the city are Jews, then we can violate the Shabbos and remove the debris. If most of the population of the city is non-Jewish, we cannot do so. So how does that square with Shmuel's statement that Ein Holchim Bivikuach Nefeshach HaRov? Here's a case where Shmuel himself says that we're going to rely on Rov to determine whether or not we're going to violate the Shabbos. So even in Pikuach Nefesh, we're going to rely on Rov. So the Gemara answers, Ki Itmar, De Shmuel Aresha Itmar. In other words, this last statement of Shmuel that we saw here on Amid, on Pehei Amid Aleph, that statement of Shmuel was said in the case
of the Reisha.
Of the Reisha. Now we go back to the Reisha of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in the Reisha, Im Rov Kusiim Kusi, right, this is the Mishnah in Ksubis, that if you find a baby in a city and most of the population of the city is non-Jews, then we assume the baby to be Jewish.
Non-Jewish,
sorry. Amar Shmuel, Ulinyan Pikuach Nefesh Eino Kain. But Shmuel is saying that, all right, you want to consider the baby non-Jewish for Yuchsin purposes, maybe even Lach Yoso, that's fine. But as far as violating the Shabbos, because we have an urgent situation, is Eino Kain, we're going to judge this baby as if the baby was Jewish, despite the fact that there's a robe here that says that the baby is non-Jewish. So it comes out that Shmuel really has a very complex statement over here. Do we rely on Rov or do we not? And for certain dinim we do rely on Rov, but for Vikuach Nefesh we're not going to rely on Rov. Okay, Rabosai, we'll call it here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So now you have a 5-minute break and no question.
Yeah, but now we're going to learn the Agadita on Daf Ayin Zayin Omid Beis, because we took upon ourselves to try to cover the 8th parak during the month of Elul and the 10 days of Tshuva till Yom Kippur. So in the Monday and Wednesday shiur, which is the Iyun, I choose selected sugyas that I want to get in depth. And then I use Tuesdays and Thursdays, not this week because Thursday is Rosh Hashanah, but I usually twice a week I try to fill in the gaps of those sugyas that we skipped, mostly Agadita sugyas, to teach them at a fast pace. I call it a pshat shiur as opposed to an iyun shiur. So we have two shiurim a week in iyun in depth and two shiurim a week that are pshat, that are just, you know, I wouldn't call it speed reading. We try to embellish it as we go along, but it's not an in-depth kind of shiur. And it's a study of Haggadah.
1 hour.
For about an hour. Yeah, that's what we do. Okay then? So that's going to be... Well, I don't know. I'll ask the chevra what time they want to start. Let me just get a little. Yitzhak Isaac, how you doing?